Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a new episode of The Tenets. My name is Kyle, and I'm joined here by my co-host, as always, Stark Realm. How you doing today, Stark?
Pretty good.
Good to hear, because today is Friday, December 13th, Friday the 13th, and we're coming off of some very exciting news. First of all, we should address the fact that we've been taking our kind of a winter hiatus. I don't think I really published anything on the feed here, but I let people know on Twitter, and I've been telling people over on Twitch. But you and I took some time off because we have busy schedules, different times of days, and we're kind of waiting for something exciting just like this so that we weren't coming in, you know, every week and letting ourselves get kind of low on steam. Instead, coming in with news after the Game Awards that Skyrim is our next direction in ESO. Like, I don't know if I want to say, is it our next, can we say it's our next chapter? Like,
it's probably the next season too. Like, it's definitely the next chapter.
I'm very excited, and I'm wondering, actually, we're going to get into speculations here, but this has me wondering if we might even see a change up to the release cycle. Like, so last night, we streamed way later than we meant to over on Twitch. Like, this Game Awards thing came out of nowhere. I think I started the day not even knowing about it. Ended the day, I think I'd done a 10-hour stream. We see this video. Everyone's very excited. I called it quits immediately after because, again, late. I was, like, sweaty. I'm tired. I get a shower, and I'm like, you know what? I have no idea what this year is going to entail. I should go record a YouTube video right now because that's what I've been doing in our off time. I went over there and started uploading to YouTube. So if anyone wants to check it out, link in the bio. But I recorded something about the Elsewhere hype, or I'm sorry, the Skyrim hype, and included a clip of Casual Ranger and I reacting to the news. But I was sitting there. I'm like, I wonder if we're going to see change ups to the release cycles. Like, what does this mean? Do you have any thoughts, Stark? What do you think for Q1 this upcoming?
I kind of suspect we're going to see two dungeons stuck someplace in Skyrim for Q1. Like, I don't expect this is going to change the release cycle drastically. If it does, like, if they go and they're like, okay, well, we're going to do Q1 as its own zone. Mm-hmm. And we're going to start with, okay, you get access to this piece of Skyrim instead of it being, oh, yeah, this is going to be two dungeons. That would be great. That would be really exciting. If it's, you know, they're adding a hold with each chapter, that would be nuts.
Oh, that'd be
cool. Because I think there's like 7 holds we haven't seen yet in ESO. So there's certainly enough room there to do content, do a zone each quarter, and still have, you know, a fairly large chunk left over for the chapter when that releases in Q2. But yeah, I really suspect it's just going to be, it's another two dungeons.
I feel like logically you're correct. I'm just so hopeful they break that cycle. Mm-hmm. Like, I just am so eager. I think the only reason I feel like we might get something that does change it, the only reason is that this is a lot, it feels like a lot bigger hype for Skyrim in a different way. So for those, we'll talk here in a second about what they're going to do for this 2020 global reveal event, but 2019 here, as Stark and I covered on the show many months back, they had Rich Lambert and a couple others fly out to Twitch HQ in San Francisco and got up on stage, got on ESO Live, it was an ESO Live sort of Twitch combo deal that they promoted, mm-hmm. and did this massive reveal. We had very little lead up. So last year, most of our news came from the data mining ahead of time. I think this is intended to be data mining. But so this year, again, we started 2019, data mine. They did that weird event that was live on Twitch that everyone clicked a bunch of things and made a circle reveal itself. Then we got Rich on stage doing the reveal. 2020, they're taking it very different. You know, we got our teaser already, December 12th. We got a news about the global reveal event. This is going to be in Vegas, January 16th. If anyone wants to attend, it's waitlist only at the moment, but hotels at least have been relatively affordable when looking at it. I got some of my rooms for $27 a night, so that's kind of nice if you can swing it. I don't know if the prices are still holding or not, but if you're into it, go out. Even if you can't get a thing for the official ESO event, I know most of the community members are holding something afterwards in some fashion, like Ranger, Casual Ranger, the Lore Seekers, myself, we've planned something for the night of the 15th. The day of the 16th is the big event, so if, even if you can't make it, that'll be live streamed on the Bethesda channel, 2 p.m. Pacific time, 5 p.m. Eastern time. I'm sure we'll get to know a lot more about that beforehand. But if you want a chance to meet Gina, Rich, Casual Ranger, Gnarly Nate, Lore Seekers, Ninja Monkey, Katie.exe, Hyperpixel, Pixie, there's so many people that are going to be there. I'm hoping this is exciting. I don't know. Sounds a little weird, maybe, but I'm curious.
Could be cool. Should be cool.
It's in a drastically different, I feel like it's a drastically different climate than the 2019 release. You know, that was a very small, intimate one. Now they're doing something that's very big in public.
Well, yeah, because last year's was specifically a broadcast event, mm-hmm. and then this is going to be, like, Vegas is an uncontained environment. Right. You've got people coming and going, and it's just going to be like, it's going to be access. So, yeah, that's going to be very different.
That has me hoping that there is, I don't know, I'm hoping whatever they release is extremely substantial in terms of what they tell us that day. Because, I don't know, you're going to have a lot of people out there, and I think a lot of people have been burnt towards the mid to end part of 2019 with ESO. I think this is their big Hail Mary to kind of get attention back on the game. But we already have predictions about this, so should we dive into that, or do you want to talk any more about Vegas, or what do you want to say, Stark?
I was just thinking, well, I'm sitting here thinking about this and realizing this, there is a really significant major difference here, and like, I already said it, but I didn't, like, when I said it, it didn't really click for me. This is going to be a bunch of community members, yourself included, a bunch of content creators, put directly in contact with the fans, whereas last year, actually, I guess it would have been the beginning of this year, it was... We had Ninja614, and I forget who else was there. There was somebody else. There was another streamer there. But it was, they were specifically doing a stream.
Mm-hmm. So Chip and Cash from Lore Seekers crew.
Right. Were. Yeah. So in that case, it was specifically just a stream. It was just, okay, well, you can interact via chat, but that's normal. Whereas in this case, it's they're actually setting up a situation where it's like, you're going to be put in direct contact with fans.
Exactly. That has me feeling a certain way. I don't know why, and maybe my brain's just hung up on that exact fact right there. But I see that as such a big thing. I really hope, again, that whatever they deliver isn't just flashy, because we got that this year. It's got to be flashy substance, and I don't know what they could... I mean, will they have anything to show, I wonder? Like, that's an interesting question. Will there be any... You know, any playable content that we get to see out there? I'm doubtful.
I'm doubtful on playable content. Okay, so if they hold to the standard format release, right, it's going to be two dungeons in quarter one. That stuff shouldn't be quite, like, it's going to be on its way towards being ready by that point, but it's not going to be ready to put in front of anybody outside the company. So it's like, if they wanted to lead with that, that's probably the worst content to put random people off a show floor in.
What, dungeon content?
Yeah, dungeon, like, DLC dungeon content.
But it's not random people off of a show floor.
No, it's not if we're talking about the streamers, talking about you, talking about the other content creators. So if they're putting you into that and just saying, okay, here, we're going to cut you loose on this and put that in front of everybody, then yeah, that would definitely fit. I'm just wondering, like, you're saying, okay, well, if they have demo units set up, then that would be, I assume, open to anybody who shows up, which is going to be sort of anybody who walks in. And DLC dungeon content's not the best place to start somebody fresh to the game.
Because I don't know actual Vegas, sort of thing well enough. But, I mean, seeing as this is not tied to any sort of actual event, like, we're only there for ESO, and there's no... I mean, I wonder if they would... I don't know if it would be open to anyone that just walks in. It's a closed arena with ticketed entrance in terms of wait list and all that sort of thing.
That's true.
So that's my, and I just don't know. You could be right. Maybe there will be just random strangers walking in and out, and then maybe that's Vegas's thing. But I just see it as, like, this to me is not a PAX by any standard, because there's nothing gaming related happening in conjunction with. A lot of people have been asking that, by the way. Good time to clear that up. This is exclusively an ESO event. It is a one-day event, technically speaking. Anything else is community driven afterwards, or the other days around it. But it should just be hardcore ESO community members. I'm saying hardcore because whoever it was that got on that wait list had to seek out that wait list. You know what I mean? That wasn't just like, hey, we're desperately dropping these pamphlets over your city. Please come to our thing. They're not the people on the Vegas Strip handing that stuff out. This one does seem very close. So I don't know. I'm just speculating and wondering because of them not having any sort of Q1 demo before. Like, we've not had an event that happened publicly for Q1 that I have been privy to.
Yeah, no. And again, like, the stuff that will be ready for Q1, it's going to be dungeon content. So yeah, it's interesting.
I would be interested to see it. You know what I mean? Even if it's just a playthrough, a little bit of the dungeon, it would be very interesting to see, especially if they're going to do anything graphically as cool as the dungeons that came with, what was it? Scalebreaker?
Scalebreaker, yeah.
Like, those were visually pretty stunning. And if they do it up with a Skyrim vibe, they might have actually something interesting to show off visually.
Yeah. The only thing that's they worry about on that front, and this is, I think you've seen this. I've certainly seen this in public builds, seen this in other forms too. The early builds don't usually present the best visual experience.
Very true.
And this is just kind of necessary from a design development perspective. You don't want to spend a lot of time making something look really, really pretty and then realize you're going to have to make some serious changes to it to make it work in dev. So I agree. Like, the stuff from Scalebreaker looked fantastic. Actually, I think the last three dungeon releases have looked absolutely fantastic artistically. So that's even going back to last year. But that's stuff that the real visual pop comes in later. Seeing some of that stuff really early on does not present the best effect. Like, when Merkmeyer was at PAX last year, there were completely, and actually also when Southern Elsewhere was at PAX this year, there were untextured enemies wandering around. So it's like,
how far out is that though? We will only be about what, 1 month away from?
That's 2 months. Yeah.
Wait, it would be because
it's
one.
August. Yeah, no, it was.
And this one, yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah, it was 2 months out. Yeah,
because so. I think we'd only be what, two weeks from PTS, I think, at the time of whatever they would show. Now, I mean, I don't want to defend that point to death because there's a very good precedent.
Well, I think that was the same. I think that's the same gap too. I think that we played We played Southern Elsewhere at PAX, and then it was on the PTS. I think a week and a half later. It was something quick, like turn around like that. So, and that was enough time to get the textures in place. So when it hit PTS, that stuff was textured, and it was like that nobody saw that version in some environment where you could get screenshots. But yeah, in the early preview builds like this, some of the visual effects just don't get finished in time, which makes sense.
Yeah, very good point. I'm very curious to see if they do try and spice anything up this year, try and shift anything. I'm very hopeful. There was a meme kind of tweet going around the ESO, around the Twitter fam there, and they were saying, let's cancel all content and just go the year of housing next year. And I was like, it was pretty comical, to say the least. But I think there is a demand in the community to see something that is not the same old, same old. And I do personally worry. It's been a really cute stamp to kind of know that we're going to have dungeons content. But I think now, if we know it's all tied together, I feel like that cycle staying a cycle feels a lot less it feels more meaningless to me as a player. I'm like, well, if I already know it's Skyrim next year, but I already know it's dungeons map, then I feel like I've already done it. I'm good. 2020 content completed, mentally speaking. I feel like it needs surprises.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's actually possible. This is something they haven't done. They could drop a zone with the dungeon content. There are actually zones from the base game that were very small. Stuff like Balfoy and Bleak Rock, areas like that, that were just sort of presented as, okay, well, here, this was part of the base game. You're starting to get used to it, but I could certainly see stuff like that being revived and then getting mixed in with the dungeon content so that the dungeon doesn't just float on the map someplace.
I'd love that.
Yeah, so even if it's like, okay, here's a zone that's going to realistically take you about 6 hours to play through, in addition to the dungeon content, it would help anchor stuff in a space, and like especially in Skyrim. Because right now, if they don't change anything about what they're doing, I can already tell you the Q1 dungeons are going to be added to either East March or the Rift.
Right.
And that's, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, you could do High Hrothgar as a dungeon. That would look really cool. You could add that to East March. Like, okay, great. But at the same time, it's like, okay, but we've done this already. We've been here already, and you're asking people to wander through a zone that, to be blunt, does not look as good as the modern zones. Like, the team has improved over the years. And saying, okay, well, we're going to ask you to run through these old zones, it's great, but it's also not great because you're not putting your best foot forward.
And I think that goes to maybe help elaborate or articulate kind of what I was trying to say earlier, because I was feeling it's not that I hate dungeons. I quite the opposite love getting them. But it's the idea of if every Q1 I have to explore two dungeons that will always and forever set me up for the next plot of why I'm going to that next zone, that trope, I guess, feels stale. You know what I mean? Doesn't matter what two dungeons. Like, it was interesting this year because this is the first time they've had dungeons tied so directly into the main quest, to my knowledge, of like a year release.
Yeah,
it was. So it was interesting, right? We were getting the Wrathstone tablets, but now I have to say, if they're gonna announce Q1, you are going into, like you said, let's just say East March, and you're gonna get the, I don't know what's the opposite of the Wrathstone tablets, the Happy Stone tablets. You're going to get Happy Stone tablet 1 out of this dungeon, Happy Stone 2 out of that dungeon, and that's going to make the Happy Dragon spew out all over Skyrim. And it's like, well, wait, what am I? Am I in 2020? I'm in 2019. Like, that's a cycle that I think for their own, like, not feeding into a trope, they hopefully will break, or at least maybe go back to re-randomizing some of those dungeons. Like, I'm not sure I'm an advocate of that either. Like, when Merkmire, when all that stuff was just coming at us and didn't have a purpose, that wasn't great. But again, I don't know which is better, like random dungeons or dungeons that are overly worked into a plot that feel repetitively dangerous or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a problem. Well, okay, there is one big problem with the dungeons, and this is with using the dungeons as part of the progressive story. Dungeons are kind of designed to be run whenever, and especially if you're just sort of engaging with the random dungeon finder, you're going to get dumped into a dungeon. You're not going to be paying attention to what's going on. You're just going to run the content, and actually figuring out what the story for a given dungeon is can be fairly difficult for people, simply because when they got the original run through with the quest, they were getting dragged along with three pugs, and they don't know, like, they don't have time to sit there and watch read dialogue, because if you try, you're going to miss the next dungeon, the next boss fight.
Yeah, and you're going to get booted, yelled at, sworn at. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's on the downside. Like, even on the upside where they don't care, it's still, you're going to be seriously behind running through the content, and you're going to be running, trying to catch up. So looking at that and saying this is a venue for storytelling, it's great. I do appreciate the idea of, you know, here's this content that's part of the story that's very difficult, and you're going to need to get a party together to deal with it. That's great. That's a sort of classic MMO thing, but that's also, that doesn't really fit the way dungeons work in ESO. And I do worry a little bit about tying this stuff in where, okay, if you want to try to follow the story for this dungeon, you actually need to stop and pay attention to what's going on. When it's a content format that's basically designed to be run through as quickly as possible by the community.
I feel like we can use their almost own terminology, but they say earlier, like, the character fantasy in one of their last big posts they made. It's kind of like, yeah, thinking the player can actually play that is the dungeon fantasy. You know, we all imagine a character, like a kid behind their computer, and they're really excited and they're going to do it. But like you said, that's not the player reality. You know, dungeon fantasy versus player reality. No one's waiting for you to read that quest, and you can't replay any of it. Like, as in, you can't actually go through and re-experience it without rolling up an entirely new tune.
Yeah, this is actually a gripe that's been kicking around with the game since launch, which is there is no facility in ESO to replay content a second time on the same character. If you want to experience a story a second time, you have to roll up a new character. That has absolutely been there since day one. That was something that used to be a bigger problem too, because it used to have quest phasing, so you couldn't one of the good examples is that mill right outside of Daggerfall,
right,
where you'd go down there and the place is under attack, and then you'd run through the quest, and when you were done with the quest, you'd solve the problem. You'd solve the attack, and the village would start putting itself back together. It never would actually repair all the burned out buildings, but the idea was you had NPCs wandering around, so supposedly they were putting it back together over time. That problem, though, where you couldn't go back and re-experience it, you couldn't help somebody else, but you can't go back and re-experience the stories in ESO without creating a new character and running the content again. That does really become a problem with the dungeons, because you can't go back and, like, even if you're just replaying it for XP and not getting, like, you don't want to give somebody skill points infinitely, obviously, but
right.
Even if you're just replaying it for the XP and the gold payout, like, that's still not an option. And with dungeons that are really dedicated to progressing the main story, that's kind of important. Because either you take control away from the player, you lock them out, you say, no, you can't progress unless you watch this theater sequence, and just annoy the hell out of people, or people run past it, they ignore it. Darkshade 1 is a really good example of this, where it's like there's a theater scene that plays that's really yes. important for the quest. And I want to say there for a long time, if you just ran past that, you would actually break the quest. So you're forced to sit there and watch this theater scene, but anybody who's just there to run the dungeon, the door opens and they're gone. They are running down towards the next pack of mobs. And it's this long run down a corridor where it's like, you're going to be chasing them for a while. You're going to have this walk of shame, and you're probably not going to catch up with them until they're halfway to the next boss. But you would get the story there at least, because you would have the dialogue between the NPCs. But yeah, it's a hard thing, because right, you can't re-experience the story in the entirety, even if you've got people with you that, you know, you're willing to work with. Even if you're trying to run the dungeon with friends and you're all going to slow down and give somebody a chance to see the dialogue, if you got dragged through quickly on your first pass, you can't re-experience it.
Wow.
Yeah. Because you can't get that original dungeon dialogue.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's very, very true. Yeah. I mean, I do agree. I don't think dungeons, sorry, Finn's team. I don't think dungeons are a great way to tell a story. But then again, I'm the least story motivated player in the entirety of all of it.
I think they're great for being able to tell stories. I just don't think that they're great for being able to tell stories that you have to connect to other things.
Okay, that's a fair one. Like, I don't actually.
Banished Souls 2 have a really good storyline, right? Because the entire thing is, there's this prison that was designed to hold captive a high elf king. I think it was the king of Firsthold, who had been consorting with Daedra. And he gets locked up in there, and then he stages an escape attempt, mm-hmm. which is the first time you go in. So you go in there, and they split up his soul, and they're storing these various things. And this idea that this will completely break him to the point that he can't be a threat ever again. And then you come through again on the second time and realize, no, wait, this didn't work. And he actually corrupted his jailers. It's a really cool little storyline there, and the pieces for it are great, but it doesn't matter for understanding what's going on outside of there. So if you're playing through Banished Cells or Banished Cells 2 and you don't know what the story is, that doesn't make it harder to follow or easier to follow or even change what's going on the rest of Auradon, right?
Right.
Whereas with Wrathstone and Scalebreaker, this stuff actually connects out. Like, Abner Tharn's dialogue changes if you've done the Wrathstone quests. And that's a little bit of a problem, where it's like, okay, but I wanted to experience the story, but these are both dungeons where I had to go through a lot of stuff.
When do the Wrathstone normal dungeons even open up to new players? So, like, on your on a normal run...
Q1 this year.
I'm sorry, that's... No, no,
Oh, level 45. Yeah, so you, level 45.
So that's also a massive problem with using dungeons for storytelling, in my opinion, is that, like, that's not in order. A new player starts in elsewhere. So, I don't know, actually, if that's creating a new character. I don't know if they worked around that, so it's not terribly shoved in there, but that's really strange. So that doesn't work super, super duper well either.
Well, and the new character is kind of, this isn't the weird part too, because the new character is designed specifically with the idea that they're coming in after the Wrathstone's been retrieved. Like the note they get from Abner Tharn sort of implies that he's already got that. And then you go through and you do the quest with him and he doesn't respond to that. He doesn't have anything there. And then you go back and do Wrathstone at 45 and then come back and it's like, wait, what? How does this mix? Yeah, that's a little bit awkward too.
Yeah, I think like you said, they really suffer. So I would go so far as to say, I don't think dungeons are a great, great way to tell any story. And I just go in to say that because it feels like there's no time to actually play through the content. Mm-hmm. I do agree dungeons as a whole, all throughout MMOs, are good for storytelling. I just don't know that our system works perfectly for that, but especially the light shines on it when you start talking about taking it outside into a larger quest.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the big thing. It's like, okay, this is... And that was the thing with Wrathstone. Like, Wrathstone is the beginning of the Season of the Dragon. Well, that's really freaking weird.
Yes. Speaking of dragons in elsewhere, are we going to see them again in Skyrim? Because some people are tweeting around saying, hey, they didn't put all that R&D into making dragons for just 1 year. Likely we're going to see them in Skyrim. Do you have any thoughts on that, Stark? Do you think we're going to be up there floating around?
I think the thought was dragon air pollution.
Dragon air pollution.
So one of the things we do see is the green glow in the south, like in the video. Like there's this green glow that comes out of the detonation of, I can't even remember the guy's name, like the dragon's name, you know, from this year. I've played through it. I don't remember his name.
I've IRL but, witnessed the green glow of smog over a city before when looking south like that. So this is, I see what you're getting here. Yeah, now it's coming all together. Yeah.
But yeah, so it's like, yeah, we've already got dragons already over there because it's just like, oh, look here, this one's been vaporized.
Oh, so you have to eat the soul? Is that what you said earlier? We were off air. Stark said the dragon should have eaten the soul.
Oh, yeah, the other dragon should have eaten the soul. Yeah, because that's the thing with, if you played a lot of Skyrim, this is sort of a familiar concept. And it actually became really important in the Solstheim expansion, Dragonborn. The souls for dragons, if you just kill a dragon in the Elder Scrolls, it doesn't stay dead. In fact, even if you have a dragonborn wander through or another dragon wander through and eat, and, you know, consume and absorb the soul of that dragon, it doesn't actually permanently destroy it. It's just moving an energy around. So the whole thing with the dragonborn was they're pulling more and more dragon souls into themselves and then using that to unlock shouts as the game mechanic. But yeah, it's remarkably difficult to actually permanently get rid of dragons in the Elder Scrolls. Because if you can find the soul and reassociate it with its body, which is actually possible. We see that from Alduin a couple of times, where it's like, oh, yeah, no, they can just revive dead dragons if they've got access to the soul. Yeah, it's kind of a problem. So, yeah, whatever was going on there, it did not look like anybody tried to contain the soul of the boss from the last game. Or from this season. So, yeah, I kind of wonder if that green glow doesn't mean we're not done with him.
What I also have to wonder, and I know some of this is me looking at it in a non-lore way, but we killed a lot of dragons in our playthrough of, you know, elsewhere, the two dungeons and then Southern Elsewhere. No one collected any of those souls, and I'm not even talking about the egregious, like, IRL, the fact that players killed, like, I don't know, multiple hundred thousand dragons. But
several hundred thousand,
yeah. Even in the game, though, we still end up killing, what, two dozen? Or is that too high? I don't know. It feels like it's quite high, the amount we actually end up killing.
If you're doing the daily quest. Okay, so if you're doing the daily quest to complete the Sanctum, and then also Northern, so like the reasonable number, we're talking about 180 kills from that alone.
There are 180 dragons in that tomb. Wow.
You know, I get the weird suspicion. It's actually probably like there's a couple of dozen and they just keep reviving themselves and going back in. It's like,
actually, that'd be hilarious.
That would be hilarious.
Didn't I kill you last week, Bob? Yeah, I'm back.
Yeah.
My job. I fly over the city and shoot the flame ball, and then you come and kill me. We have you
just stab me again. Yeah.
Well, but if we did kill like even a dozen dragons that in lore, like killed 12, let's say, there should be then 12 souls floating around there waiting for mayhem or something like that.
Yeah, which gets me back to the idea that it really starts to sound like, oh, hey, somebody, like one of the other dragons is going by. And it's like, oh, hey, he's dead again. Let's just get him back up.
I wonder what that's going to mean for our next year. I wonder if that tells anyone out there that's listening. I wonder what people are thinking up. I did see, I think Casual Ranger revised his. I should look for his tweet now. But he said something along the lines of, I think after sleeping on it, I'm almost there. He's saying he thinks it's going to be Black Reach now.
Mm-hmm.
And that does seem to be quite a popular idea going on.
I kind of suspect we'll see Black Reach as a dungeon or a trial. That should be a pretty cool space for a trial. They could actually add it as a new zone, like on the Outer Ring, probably. So like you go in and you've got a port direct, you've got the option to port directly into it versus you can port to Skyrim and then to travel down. Something we did see in Elsewhere in Somerset that was really cool was there was a delve with two different exits. And that was just like the something or other pass. I can't remember what it was, something King Pass, but you could go in one side, come out the other side.
Oh yeah. And, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Yep.
It would be really cool if you had a situation like with Somerset where Black Reach was its own subzone, and you actually had delves, maybe two or three delves in Skyrim that then connect through to that other zone.
Ooh, that would be
so easy. Like you come in on one side and you've got one zone and then through and you come out of the other zone, you're down there. If they wanted to, it might also be a way to revisit the entire adventure zone concept, because Black Reach is supposed to be incredibly dangerous. So if you're going to say, okay, you need to have a group to go there, that would fit. Could certainly get behind that too. Could be neat stuff.
Yeah, I wonder if that instead would, that's something I could actually see them implementing that would change up the cycle, just in terms of, okay, let's be honest, let's give them a benefit of a doubt in terms of workload and say maybe Q1 is still two dungeons, but it would be very cool to see Q3 broken into, you know, more adventure zone style stuff. I just feel like four dungeons a year is so much and so little diversity. I would love an adventure zone, especially like that. That would be great. I did see some people mention Black Reach potentially being a new trial and the excitement about that. So I don't know. Very, very.
Yeah, Black Reach is one of the places that actually does have a dragon. I'm trying to find the name right now. There is a dragon down there specifically. And it's not. It's one of the ones that was not revived by Alduin. Like when you fight it in Skyrim, it's been there for the last however many thousand years.
Interesting. Well, I'm wondering, I know that we've got to talk about some other ones that are out there, some other speculation. So are we going to get any sort of dragon shouts in this next year?
I seriously doubt it.
I seriously doubt it and seriously hope we don't. No offense to anyone that's dying for that, but like.
And so, first off, there's like three things here. One is, yes, Dragonborn exist, but we don't know where any are right now. And that's actually kind of important, because if you had a Dragonborn, like from a lore perspective, from a storyline perspective, if you had a Dragonborn in the second era running around, they would have a very solid claim to the Ruby Throne. And with the throne in contention the way it is right now, there would be nothing to stop a Dragonborn from claiming the throne. And that would just completely screw up the timeline. Because we've got another 400 years of, I think it's another 400 years of the second era to go through, or another 200 years, something like that, before we actually get another Dragonborn that will come in and be able to say, okay, I'm taking over the. So in that gap right now, we don't really have a space to even have a Dragonborn wandering around without it really starting to screw things up. And It is possible for non-Dragonborn to learn to shout. We've got a bunch of examples of that from Skyrim. One of them is, oh God, what's his name? The just freaking spaced on it. But the leader of the rebels, and then also with the Greybeards, obviously. Well, the problem with this is, one, it takes years to learn a dragon shout, like years of studying for a human to learn to shout. And the other thing is, as you learn more shouts, you actually lose the ability to speak normally. And we see this with the Greybeards, where it's like they can't, some of them can't speak at all. They remain mute regardless, because if they try to speak, they will channel the power of the dragons unintentionally.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's like you actually give up a lot to learn to shout as a normal person.
So you lose access to all text chat whenever you, and you can no longer talk to quests.
Yeah, text chat. And if you're on Discord, you immediately accidentally kill everyone in your party.
Oopsies. And no more doing any quests. You're permanently halted because you can't respond.
Yeah, because you can't have dialogue. You'll have to sit there and just click remain silent.
That doesn't work so well. I've learned.
It does not. But so like those things are there, and you'll see these conversations come up, but it's like, I really hope we don't see shouts, at least not as a player thing. I'm absolutely fine with seeing an enemy who can shout. Like, we've had a couple of those. That does happen, but it's still pretty rare and should probably stay pretty rare.
I think so too. I really do. I think that many of that, that's where I get a little bit concerned over some of this. Like, gosh, I see both sides of it, as you do so often on Twitch and the forums and things like that, where one party adamantly wants one thing that completely contradicts and conflicts with another thing. And so, you know, there's no appeasing everybody. And for that, we're kind of sorry. It's just the way life works. But yeah, it's one of those, I'd be fine without us doing shouts. As much as it's cool to go back to Skyrim, I really don't want to be replaying TES5 Skyrim. Like, I, you know what I mean? That lived and had a very important point in my life and all that. But
oh, that reminds me another thing I really do not want to say.
Let's hear it.
The Vampire Lord. I do not want to see that on the playable, on player characters.
Yeah, I'm mixed there, because like a part of me wants it, but another part of me really does not want it for the
same
reason.
It's really, really cool. Mm-hmm. It's a really cool thing. Like, it's, oh, hey, this is this awesome power you can get for your vampire. At the same time, it's like, this is so freaking lore breaking. I'd love to fight one.
Yeah,
I'd love to have one as a boss. Like, that's legitimately, we're sitting here saying, okay, well, what can you do with this? You can do another vampire dungeon. Maybe not Q1, maybe Q3, where it's like, oh, you have to go into Castle Wolkahar, or you have to go into a Dwemer ruin that has been taken over by vampires, and one of them is a vampire lord. You know, and they transform out during the fight, and then you have to deal with one. That would be awesome. I just don't want to see that on a player.
I agree with you for pretty much the same exact reason. I think that's it for me too. But also, a part of me, if they told us they were giving us Vampire Lords, I wouldn't also rage quit. I'd be like, okay, I'm ready dive into it, I guess.
Because they're freaking awesome.
They are.
That's freaking awesome. But it's just, it's also lore breaking as hell. So it's like, I'm caught here. Please don't do this, but it would be really, really cool.
Yeah, because I think also the thing that needs to be said is it's cool, and maybe that's why it should be restricted, not overplayed. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want, don't worry, someone out there, I'm certain of this, I just know my heart of hearts, someone out there will add your Vampire Lord to TES6. That will be a mod, I'm sure. They modded liches into Skyrim. There's no way you don't get to play them in the next, you know, game unofficially. But
they actually tried to mod werewolves into Oblivion. Like, that was, Oblivion really wasn't set up for it, and that was one of the things they were always running up against with the mod developers, but they were really trying to get the werewolves back into Oblivion for years.
Interesting.
Because that was something that had already been around. Yeah,
I can see why. I mean, honestly, when Skyrim added the addition to transform, because it was only the vampire, right? There was no other thing that you could be in Oblivion. So it's just vampire. Mm-hmm. And then the vampire kind of sucked when Skyrim launched. Like, I mean, everyone has a differing opinion, but he was way lamer. They did a big vampire overhaul when they released the Dawn of Dark.
There was a lot of changes with vampire. Well, not just with vampires,
werewolves
with racism, with classes. Werewolves were pretty close. They had the actually, you're right. There was a major difference with werewolves. So in Daggerfall and in Morrowind, werewolves transformed against their will. Mm-hmm. Like that was in Daggerfall, I think it was just full moons, which meant because there's two moons, because the moons used to be on a separate cycle, it was really wacky trying to figure out when you transform. But you transform on the full moon. And then in Morrowind, they're like, okay, well, trying to figure out when you'll transform or not is going to be confusing for the player, so screw it. You're just going to transform every night.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was really wild. It was a cool game, but it was a really wild thing. Where you transform each night, you'd have to kill somebody. If you didn't, it would drain your health over time. Then you'd recover at dawn. It made several quests very, very difficult to complete because they were tied to time of day. It was possible, but it was a pain. And then they did not bring the werewolf back for Oblivion at all. And mod devs were working on trying to get that there for years. It was a very big struggle for them. And I don't know if they ever managed to do it satisfactorily. But then when Skyrim came along, it's like, okay, well, werewolves are back. And there were a lot of people, myself included. Yeah, that's great. Been missing those.
They were very, very fun. I really like playing one in Skyrim. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was an interesting time, interesting space to see. I think this would be fitting regardless for an overhaul to the vampire skill line. That's something that I think we have requested for a while now, but that would be very interesting to see. People are still speculating spellcrafting might actually come out through this. I'd rather have spellcrafting hands down versus any sort of dragon shout thing.
Spellcrafting would still be really cool. I know where they're going with that too. They're thinking, okay, well, if the College of Winterhold has a spellcrafting terminal thing, then we could do that there. And yeah, it's true. We could. It would be really cool. I'm not sure how I feel about spellcrafting these days. It's still something where I look at it and go, yeah, it's still something where I have no people who are like, I'm not coming back to the game until spellcrafting is added.
Wow.
But at the same time, it's also really, this is something where they've gone back to it, I think at least three times, and said, okay, we're going to try to make it work this time. And each time it's been put back on the shelf as it didn't work. So yeah, I really do have mixed feelings about that.
I have,
because it is a huge bound. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, sorry, I shouldn't cut you off there. I was gonna say I've bittered to it as well. Yeah, it sounds cool on paper, but I really worry about what that does in game when we all have these other balance concerns that people are worried about, and all, you know what I mean, there's a lot of other things that take precedence over a whole other system like that, maybe.
Yeah. Well, and the ultimately, if I just boil it down to one issue, I'm still left with this question of, right now with the game, if you're wanting to play a character, you've got your weapon lines, you've got your guild lines, you've got your, well, actually your weapon and armor lines, you've got your world skill lines, and then you've got your class skill lines. And your class skill lines fill out a fairly substantial chunk of your utility toolkit. Like, if you're going to be doing this with this, like, if you're going to be doing DPS with a Nightblade, you're going to be using Nightblade powers. If you're going to be doing anything with a Necromancer, you're going to be using Necromancer abilities. If you want a pet as a Stamsorc, you're going to be using the Clan Fear. But if you're playing a game, if you're playing a version of this game where everyone has access to a wolf companion, sort of like what you had with the Conjuration Tree in Skyrim, where you can just have this familiar, and you're playing a Stamsorc, does it matter if you're running the wolf or the Clan Fear? And suddenly you have a situation where right now the Stamsorc's the only class, only Stam class that has a persistent toggle pet. So now, how is your Stamsorc different from your Stamblade that has a wolf slotted?
Right.
It's a weird state where it's like, I would really worry about either spellcrafting isn't powerful enough to matter and the abilities are worthless and it basically adds nothing to the game, or it's powerful enough that it replaces specific class abilities, and at that point, class identity starts to really suffer.
Wow. Honestly,
yeah, it's like I would love it. I would absolutely love spellcrafting because it's like, this is so cool. This is like, I can do all of this stuff with my character, But at the same time, it starts moving towards this isn't a bad thing. It starts moving towards an approach to the game where your class is not a permanent identity for your character. It's a starting point. And I'd be fine with that. To be honest, if this was part of a global shift in the game, and it would be consistent with Skyrim, by the way, like from where TES5 was, if it was part of a global shift in the game towards a point where you're going to get access to the other class skill lines also, like everybody becomes this slurry of you can take anything, then I could certainly see it and I could certainly defend it and say, okay, well, we're moving towards this unified system. I think that still gets into a point where it's like you'd have people saying, well, this is the only way you could play DPS. You need this skill line, this skill line, this skill line. And I worry that there are specific combinations that are just hilariously broken, such as I think it's Earth and Heart or Draconic Power, whichever one gives you Battle Roar, and combining that with the entire freaking Daedric Conjuration skill line and the Nightblade's Assassin skill line for their ultimate. But, you know, there's combinations where it's like this was not designed, the game was not designed with these combinations in mind. But outside of stuff like that, I could certainly see a situation where it's like, okay, well, we're moving to a point where you're going to be able to pick up the other class lines as well. That would certainly solve, that would solve a long-term problem they've been dealing with and wrestling with, which is we've added a new class, and it's going to happen next year, or not next year, it's going to happen 2021 if they keep to the current schedule. So it's going to be another class added. Well, what happens if we just change it so that you can start adding those class skill lines to your existing character?
Wow, that'd be such a change. That'd be a massive change.
It would. But at the same time, it would start to solve the problem of, okay, but do you really want to roll up your 20th character?
Well, and this is something that Final Fantasy apparently has already tackled to some degree. I mean, I've not played Final Fantasy 14 myself, but the idea of being able to switch your class identity kind of on the fly, or, you know, to me, I'm always happy to go back to a city and do it, you know, go to a Stendar shrine, whatever, reset, re-add a line. That'd be very interesting. I just wonder if they'd make that sort of shift on their, you know, 6 years into it being live or whatever.
I don't know. And that, yeah, and that depends on how long they're trying to go for.
I will say, not to be too depressionist, but man, this is just a state of the game sort of thing. Yesterday, prior to the Skyrim announcement, people were speculating ESO 2 to 3 more years at its current pace.
Yeah, I saw that.
Ooh, I was saying 5 to 10 being kind of rat. Like I can see 5 active years of development from now, and then 5 years to let it slowly die off. You know, that seems to be what MMOs do. Go ahead.
On the range of being a little worried right now, not, you know, oh, hey, the sky is falling, but stuff to worry about. Elder Scrolls Legends just had new content suspended, all new content production suspended.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
So that was, they were slated for another expansion this year. And that was suspended. It's in maintenance mode. The game's still going to exist, obviously, but it's not going to be getting new content from here on out, at least for the foreseeable future. On the other hand, Blades just released to the Switch. It just had some fairly major overhauls on the back end there. One of the major things was the chest timers were removed. So one thing that was going on with Blades was you'd go someplace, you'd find a chest, a treasure chest, you'd pick it up, but then you couldn't just open it. Like if it was a white grade chest, it would take, I think it was 5 or 30 seconds, something like that. Whereas if it was like a blue chest, it would take 6 hours. They've changed that so that chests open immediately now, and they've also altered the game so that normal enemies will drop loot. And there's been a massive overhaul there. I think it's probably for the better in that. So okay. It is this weird time where it's like, on other Elder Scrolls games, we've got one that's actually having its death knell, and in another case, it's having major overhauls to address criticisms.
Wow.
So I don't know where we're going with this. I really don't know where going. I hope it's going to be the 5 to 10.
Same.
But it's going to depend on where the population's at. Like, what happens with the player base? There's a lot of people playing, and I do think that a lot of the people we see that are like, well, fuck this shit, I'm out, they do actually represent a very small, even if it's a very important portion of the community. Like that endgame community that abandoned okay, they're gone, but there's still going to be new people coming in going, okay, but I want to go through this progression stuff. I want to get into this, get into trials. I want to get into end game stuff. And you still see them, even though, you know, oh, hey, the end game community is dead because guard left. That's not true. A lot of the old guard left, but it doesn't mean that there's never going to be anyone to replace them.
That is so true. That is absolutely true. I think what bothers me about the current state is witnessing the leaving of many people due to what I call like very rational concerns. Because, you know, like we said, we lost people because they were on the high end of the spectrum and there was no, you know, X, Y, and Z. You guys know these really drumbeaty style reasons. But I witnessed a lot of people in Twitch chat leave due to, again, what we've said to death, event burnout. A lot of people got... A lot of people have stayed with the stream, but have quit playing the game themselves, left during combat changes. As my chat's been really good at pointing out, this was a really tough year for them because of the steep competition. Final Fantasy, by all, I guess, accounts, really killed it with all their content this year. World of Warcraft.
So is Destiny.
Oh, like, yeah, that's Destiny,
the other
too.
Ones.
Oh,
yeah.
Great point.
They had a really good year.
WoW Classic, you know, really hit that nostalgia bell for a lot of people and pulled many of them back for multiple months. I think I'm just starting to see some of my people come back out of Classic just now, which is a lot longer than I expected. It was just
also slightly different, but Path of Exile's been pulling a lot of people this year.
That's true. And they have more stuff coming for them.
Yeah, this is okay. So there's never a good time to have a bad year.
Right.
But this was probably one of the worst years for ESO to have a bad year. Because there was a lot of really solid competition. And it comes also at the same time that Bethesda was pissing people off with Fallout 76. So even though Bethesda is separate from ESO, separate from ZeniMax Online, it's still, oh, hey, Elder Scrolls is a Bethesda property.
Yes.
And Bethesda was pissing people off with both Blades and with Fallout 76. I was like, this was not a good year to have a bad year.
It's very, very true. And for anyone out there, like what Stark said, you know, it doesn't really matter to the people making buying decisions in their life or what they go do. A lot of people don't see a difference between Bethesda and ZeniMax. We see that all the time. Not a problem, just an uneducation sort of thing. But again, when it comes to that level of like people just being frustrated, that doesn't factor in. You know, they're not concerned about nitpicking. But yeah, very good points all around. This has been a very tough year for them. I really feel like 2020 is gotta come back with a lot of content. So I'm very hopeful. Please, ZeniMax, we'd love to see some serious depth of content. I don't just mean storyline. I think we're very much in the market for some system-wide changes, and that doesn't mean combat, but just depth in systems. I know I've been, you know, dinging the gong for guild tools. I really want more of that. I'd love to see that sort of thing. Maybe guild questing added in. That's things that other games already do. Our events could drastically use an overhaul and a slimming down. Gosh, there's just so many little areas that need a lot of TLC. And I'm just curious is 2020 going to be the year of fixing those mistakes? Is it going to be the year of doubling down on 2019 mistakes? I'm rooting for you, ZeniMax. I really am. Come on, you guys. I'm ready. Let's do this. Skyrim title has me hyped. That's all I got to say.
That's going to have a lot of people hyped.
Now this is the tools to retain them.
Yeah. Well, this has got to be a really solid launch. There's actually something else here you got the question mark on with dragons and Skyrim, and it's like, I don't think we're going to see them as the insurgencies this year.
Wait, sorry, I don't say think that again. Sorry, I missed that.
I don't think we're going to see the dragons as the insurgencies this year.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I really doubt that that's going to be, that this is going to be the version of Dark Anchors for Skyrim.
I really hope not, because again, diversity needs to go way high. Like I think there is one good way to lock yourself. Well, I'm so torn, because it is true that if any Skyrim players come over and they want to kill dragons, they can definitely go down to Elsweyr and kill all the dragons they want forever. But at the same time, I'm also wondering, are they going to be okay with that kind of change? Are they okay with having their Skyrim players come in to know dragons? I think they should be. I think it'd be quite bad if they forced dragons into Skyrim against everything they said last year.
I think the best solution, like, to please both groups is going to be to have a Dragon World boss.
Oh, interesting. I mean, yeah, I would. Yeah, because
they've demonstrated with Southern Elsewhere, they're not afraid of putting world bosses in that will clean your clock.
Right.
And there is a dragon, and I was trying to find the name earlier, and it was actually, I ended up with audio coming through on the microphone because the site I was using had video ads. But there were a couple of dragons in TES5 that weren't actually revived by Alduin. They'd been kicking around the entire time. Including the one you fight at the Whiterun Tower at the very beginning of the game. Like, that one is not one that's been revived by Alduin. He's just been up and going this entire time.
Oh, wow.
So I could certainly see this thing where you've got where you actually have a dragon active in Skyrim, and then you could even indicate that, oh, hey, we're going to revive this guy again because we killed him last time by having another dragon fly in and revive him, fly off. Nah, that could be an option. So you actually have a visual cue that, oh, hey, this world boss is up. Wow. That could be cool. That could fit. And you could have a fight in and around a word wall. Like, that would all fit together. This thing where it's like, if you're coming in as a Skyrim player, it's like, oh, yeah, no, here, check this out. This is exactly what you're looking for. But this is, if you want to just fight wild dragons, you're going to have to go someplace else.
Very good point. I like it, Stark. I like it. I feel like we probably need to call it here. We're getting late in time in this episode, and we could speculate, and you know, there's so little to read into right now, you know, between the 2-3 seconds of the trailer that actually shows this off. We want to hear your predictions. I'll be reading them over on Twitter, but if you guys want to send some directly into the show, thetenantspodcast@gmail.com. That will be in the description, or I guess I should say show notes for this episode. If you guys want to check out my little video about the recap of the hype last night, that's youtube.com/ Kyle Dempster Studios. Stark, what do you got going on these days? Why don't you reintroduce the projects you are working on? Because it's been a little since we've caught up with people.
Yeah, so I do co-author How to Fight Right, and you can find that at Tumblr, howtofightright.com. You can also find that at howtofightright.com. By itself, that's actually the separate WordPress site. And then beyond that, you can find me on Twitter when I'm actually awake and alert there.
But you're not under Stark Realm.
No, I'm not. I'm Michael J. Schwartz on Twitter.
Everyone's like, who is this guy? I'm like, that's Stark.
Yeah. Yep. Cunningly disguised as a normal person.
You would think he is not. I mean, but it turns out he actually is, question mark. Or is he a dragon polluting the sky? I don't know. Well, you guys can catch me over at twitch.tv/ Kyle Dempster Studios. Stark is often there. We often got a lot of the ZeniMax crew hanging out too. We love to harass Rich. Oh, all during the Game Awards last night, I kept sending him every different game trailer. I would be like, is this yours? Yeah. Are we going into space next year? Spaceships? Whoa! He's like, you are an asshole. You need to stop.
Kept warning you, he's going to disown you.
Yeah, he did. He warned me off via text in the middle of it, and then changed his tune. He goes, "That wasn't it, you." He's like, "You just need to stop." What do you say? No, that was for you. Less getting distracted by other games. So I sent him a picture of a spaceship and said, "This ESO?" Question mark. They are great friends, and we've already reached out. It looks like we'll probably be doing some interviews with Rich on, I mean, it looks like probably around January. I just got word from Gina when they want to do some press cycle stuff, so we'll probably look at doing that into the new year. So if you guys have any questions or anyone you want us to try and get on in particular, or again, if you have, you know, overarching questions you want to start thinking up now, that would be great. Let us know, and we will see you, I guess, soon-ish, because we don't really have a return schedule. We're not necessarily back on a weekly thing just yet. And I think our next one we want to recap for everyone is the New Life Festival, whenever we get the official word from Zoss. So
yeah, so that should be coming fairly soon,
I would imagine, because I think it's the 19th, I think, of the month is...
Yeah, it's only the 19th or the 20th running through to the 2nd. I think it's 19 to the 2nd.
Yes, that's correct. Memory. Yep, no, that's right. That's right. 19 to the 2nd. So you guys might get an episode just next week sometime, because they'll have to publish it, I guess, by Tuesday or Wednesday. So ta-da. Yeah. Okay, everyone, until then, enjoy your journeys across Tamriel. Check out the podcast show notes for all the links you might need, and send us your speculation for the game. Have a great week, everyone. Bye-bye.
Take care.